You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Farm direct produce became something of a rarity in America after World War II, which led Barry Benepe and Robert Lewis to create the New York Green Market. Their intention was to reconnect city dwellers to their food sources and support local farmers who were having trouble making ends meet. That was 30 years ago last month. Today, Green Market has expanded to 45 locations throughout the city, and I'm very pleased to welcome now Barry Benepe and Robert Lewis, along with Ron Benaghi from Stokes Farm. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Glad to be here.
Barry and Bob, was there a specific catalyst for the formation of Green Market? Let's begin with Barry.
The good food. The good food in the region. When we saw it on Long Island, it was just fantastic, and none of it was in New York City.
Well, there's a long tradition of farmers markets in Europe, but were there any green markets in other parts of the United States?
There were only a few at that time.
I'd imagine San Francisco and little else.
Actually, even California didn't have the great markets it has today back then. But we were also inspired by the concern about markets throughout the world that were being demolished, especially the famous one in Paris, France. John Hess, the New York Times critic, wrote about and bewailed about the famous Le Halle. We could see that that loss of that great institution, like other great markets in New York City history, would lead inevitably towards poorer quality food.
But so, John Hess also inspired us with writing about the Rochester Market, which had been going for 100 years. And he was like our godfather. He inspired us to start.
So John Hess, who used to be a regular on this show, also played a role in this.
Very much.
So Barry, what did you imagine at first?
We didn't. It was actually Bob and I discussing the loss of farmland. I was working for developers taking away farmland. I didn't like what I was doing. And I was hoping to do something about it, and I talked to...
To assuage your guilt?
No, not so much, but to reverse the trend. I didn't really feel guilty, but I wanted, since I had the tools, I wanted to use them in a better way.
And so you decided that you wanted to do this, but did you have any idea of where you would do
nope.
it and how it would work or anything like that?
We felt our way one day at a time. Bob went after farmers, and I went after sites and money.
How many locations did you have at the start?
One. Uh-huh. 59th Street and 2nd Avenue, a block from Bloomingdale's. And it was the choice of that market which pointed the success of the program. And the market site was suggested by one of our funders, Suzanne Davis, who's with the J.M. Kaplan Fund. And she lived near there. And she said, why don't you put a market on this empty city-owned site? And the Council on the Environment was our sponsor. They run the program. And they said they worked through the mayor's office, and they secured the site for us. And that got and a block from Bloomingdale's, we couldn't. And Ron was just describing today before we started, we closed the gates. It was the only gated market we had in the city, the first one. And people waited outside and they, with anticipation. They lined up on the sidewalk. And then the gates were thrust open. Everybody was ready. The farmers were lined up like captains at their posts. And the
people
displayed.
Came in like buffalo.
Yeah.
And great. You were there that first day.
Yes, I was fortunate to be there on the first day in 76. I was 16 years old.
With his father.
With my dad.
You were in one of the closest farms.
Yes, actually, in the Green Market system, we're the closest farm to the city of anyone. We're only 27 miles from Union Square. You can see the Empire State Building from the roof of my barn.
That has to be a rarity. Were there other farms when you started in the area?
No,
you're pretty much the only one for a long time.
Yeah, in Bergen County, when you cross the George Washington Bridge, you're in my county. And people think, Bergen County, how could there possibly be a farm? Because they're thinking of...
Fort Lee.
Fort Lee, exactly. We grow subdivisions better than we grow vegetables. That's what it said anyway. But there's still about, I don't know, I'd say 5 to 6 working farms in Bergen County and successful farms.
And how large can a farm be in such an urbanized
area? The average farm in New Jersey is 90 acres. We're 17 acres. Land value, we're way more than the 90-acre farm that's in South Jersey because the development pressure for in the northern suburbs is incredible. So we have to make every ounce and every inch of land count.
And what are you growing the same things today that you grew when you first went to the Green Market?
Oh, not at all. over my lifetime, we've changed so much. I'm fifth generation to work the same land as my ancestors have. And when we first started, it was tomatoes, peppers, eggplant, strawberries. That was it. That's all we did. And yeah, we brought those in and we had a market-driven society where we could grow what we wanted and people would have to buy it. And then consumers started changing our economy to consumer-driven market, and we had to grow what they wanted, which is fine with me. And now we've evolved to about 70 different items.
Really? On those 19 acres?
Yes. Believe it or not. We have 10 acres of
three strawberries and five tomatoes?
No more strawberries, but we do grow tomatoes indoors now, which is a little more technical. And we grow 10 acres of herbs, which is a lot of herbs.
Now, another aspect of the... First of all, let me tell everyone that my guests are Ron Bernanke, who is a farmer, in fact, has been with the Green Market since opening day. And two creators of the Green Market, Barry Benepe and Robert Lewis, are here. We're celebrating the 30th birthday last month of what has now become a major part of the New York eating experience. But at that time, was just something I'm sure that a select few felt was going to please them, that you are on 59th Street in an area that mostly wealthy people live in. Was that a concern of yours, Barry? Bob?
It's interesting that people at that first market responded in ways that we couldn't have predicted. For example, many of them talked about their own childhood on their farms, the farms that they grew up on, or the farms that are still in their family. So there was a response here, almost an unconscious response by people who probably never think or thought of the farms that they were from. And this just resulted in an outpouring of affection for what was going on. So the fact that it was in a the Upper East Side, did not really matter. I mean, there were plenty of people certainly there with money who were willing to buy, but we were really after an idea that we expected to grow and expand throughout the city.
And how long before it started expanding there?
Well, before we leave 59th Street, some of those wealthy people were really hurting us. They wanted us to close early when they came back from the Hamptons, and they found the market unsightly. They would take photographs of the empty baskets and say, "Look at this," you know. And their neighbors were shopping there, but they didn't like the appearance of the market.
Not in my neighborhood.
Right.
Not in my backyard.
And we still face that. Even today, we tried to start a market this year in the Upper East Side, and people in the co-op says that we don't want it here in a school.
I would have thought that people would have treasured them wherever they are these days, because the Green Market has become so much a part of the New York food culture.
Generally, they do. Obviously, the customers do. But on the Upper West Side a couple of years ago, the chairman of the planning board said, "What do we care about farmers?"
So when did you move to Union Square, and when did you move to Harlem and to some of the other
locations?
Union
Square was the first year as well, and that was interesting because Union Square was trying to revive itself under the aegis of the city planning department, and they had heard about us on television. 59th Street was a fortuitous selection because the media responded. We got on three major television channels the first year because it was a noteworthy item to bring up at the end of the news program. So people were calling City Hall and said, "Where is this market? How can I get into it?" If we'd been in some outlawed area, nobody would have heard of us. We wouldn't have gotten started. Union Square came as a result of a call from the Manhattan Planning Office, a woman named Meetu Baxter at the City Planning Department, and said, "Would you help us in the revival of Union Square?"
But the Union Square has also had some resistance, hasn't it?
There
was at least one Parks Commissioner.
The Community Board was very supportive.
But there was a Parks Commissioner at one point who felt that the market was growing too big.
Yes.
Encroaching on the park. And I think
that
the public
was more posturing and game playing than anything else, I think.
Yeah, he was a great guy with a wonderful sense of humor.
And a shopper.
Yes,
yeah.
He was a shopper.
So you left 59th Street, right?
Well, actually, no. We were at 59th Street, and after the first day, I remember my dad coming home and thinking, "Is there some kind of famine in the city?" What's going on? That was like a quote that was used somewhere. Yeah. And there was this other market opening, and he said, "Hey, do you want to run that? You know, I'll run this, and you run that." And I was only 16. I had to sit on a phone book to reach the pedal to drive the truck. So I said, "All right, I'll try it." He goes, "You know what? Why don't you just keep it? Because what could that possibly do, that market? Where could it possibly go? Look at the area." I mean, just look at the park. It's awful.
See, the Union Square was a depressed area at that time.
He goes, just see what you can do. If you make a few bucks, that would be great. Little did he know, 30 years later, Union Square is the top of the shelf, and 59th Street is now a building.
But the first two or three years were hard.
I mean, there weren't that many people. Union Square, it was. There was 12 farmers originally, and it was a dangerous spot, although I didn't realize it. When I was only 16, I said, this is cool, I'm in the city. But I didn't realize, what was going on.
But it wasn't dangerous for you.
There were, when it rained, all the drug addicts and homeless from the park went into the pavilion. We were parked right next to the pavilion at that time. And they would be shouting at us, throwing things at us, taking our tomatoes, throwing them at each other. And there was always fights going on. And for a little while, I thought it was pretty fun. It was interesting entertainment. But after a while, we had to have security there.
Was that a concern, Bob? Because as you thought about going to other locations, I'm sure you also had to think about security.
Well, naturally, but the markets really do defy expectation. I mean, the markets are people places. The markets are about wholesome feelings, food, enjoyment, pleasure, and I think most of the farmers, after a little while, realized that they were really oases within the city, safe territories, and that's also true from the customer's point of view.
What about the rules that farmers have to follow? Were they there from the start?
Indeed, they were. I mean, what distinguished Green Market was...
Well, they really had to evolve.
Well, they evolved, but we were dedicated to the farmer only.
The initial concept when we started, we didn't think any farmers would come to the city at all, and we prepared to get vans to go out to the farms and bring the material in. And then when the first farmer came in with a box of toys and a later farmer brought in bananas, we realized we needed rules. And the rules then, you could buy 25% of what you brought in from neighboring farmers. Now we had to define neighboring. And only gradually did the rules tighten over the years.
So it had to be locally grown.
And
it
had to be,
it had to be your own
farm
produce.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
And
that's important because it distinguishes you from the vendor on the street. Why should I come to Green Market? I live in a city. I can just go down right downstairs in my apartment and buy whatever from the grocer. Why do I need to come to Green Market?
We had an outcry from the wholesale industry when we first opened, from the Packer, which is in their newspaper. And as soon as they saw what we were really doing, that they were farmers, they didn't worry anymore. They said, farmers are no threat to us.
Because initially they saw it as competition.
Yes.
And
we were really a supplement.
But also, don't you also have certain rules as to what kinds of fertilizers people can use, what kinds of insecticides?
No, that's separate. If a person is a registered organic farmer, certified organic farmer, they have to follow those guidelines.
Have you changed your farming methods in any way as a result of the rules of the Green Market?
Not really. Well, I could say way back when we were allowed to buy three items, whatever, you can buy, and then it got down to one item. You were allowed to buy and sell one item as long as it's from a local farm. And I remember a lady parked next to me, she had foliage plants, and she said, I don't have a problem with this. I only buy one item, plants. And that's when the rules kind of got a little murky. But anyway, getting back to the change, we were selling peaches, and we don't grow peaches. So we stopped selling peaches, and we had a void in our income. So we said, all right, what else are we going to grow? And some chef said, hey, can you grow some rosemary and basil for me? I can't get good basil anywhere. It's all right, you have any? He goes, here, I got these seeds. I got them from Europe. Okay. We planted them, and that's where it started. He grew, and he bought everything we could grow.
And we'll take a little break, come back, and talk about the impact that the Green Market has had on restaurants in New York. So many of them now talk about how they get a fair amount of the things that they cook from the Green Markets. My guests are farmer Ron Badaghi from Stokes Farm in northern New Jersey, and the two creators of the Green Market 30 years ago last month, Barry Benepe and Robert Lewis. Stay with us for more. We're back with two creators, although they had help, of the Green Market 30 years ago, Barry Benepe and Robert Lewis, and Ron Badaghi, who is one of the first farmers, in fact, a farmer who sold at the Green Market on its very first day. And we're talking about the changes that the Green Market has wrought on New York's food culture. Ron, you mentioned the restaurateurs, the chefs who came in. Were they there from the start?
No. it took a while to educate the you know, the consumer, much less the chef, who didn't have time, because the chefs are it's a full-time job. And
but chefs have often been trained in Europe, and they European chefs always go to the local market. In many cases, they actually grow the stuff themselves.
We had some European chefs, some French chefs, and some Italian chefs that walked through the market and said, "Oh my God, you've been here the whole time?" And said, "Well, we've been here for a few months." "Oh my God, this is great." And pretty soon that caught on. And we used to have one chef, and I can't remember his name, he's French. His whole menu was based on what was in Green Market on Saturday morning or on Wednesday morning, whenever we were. He'd come to the market, buy all his stuff, then go back to the restaurant, write out his menu by hand, nail it on the door, and that was it.
Bernard Leroy, I think it was. Leroy, yes. He's in Chile these days, but that's a whole other matter. I remember he made a commitment, and then other restaurants did. And then when Union...
Danny Myers Group.
Yeah, Danny Myers started announcing that he was going to use the Green Market as a major source. That really convinced a lot of people.
And he does.
So what was happening to you people at this time? You have a success on your hand. How long before you realized that you had a major success?
I'm not sure we ever felt that way. It was a constant job. It was first of all, we were opening new sites every year. We had to be very choosy, because you raised a question before about a high-income area when we opened the first market. My major goal was to make sure the markets were successful. Successful means that farmers made money. That's the bottom line. If it doesn't work, then the program is shot. So we wanted to open up in areas which would attract customers who were going to spend money and wanted the food.
Well, we're talking about farmers making money. How did you make money before the Green Markets? You had a very small farm. You couldn't mass produce tomatoes or strawberries.
Correct. Before Green Market, we have a farm stand, which has been open since 1950. And the farm stand was not doing as well. We had a gas crunch around 1974, 75, energy crisis, et cetera, waiting on lines for gas, all that stuff. And our costs at that time rose considerably, as they're doing in the last 6 months. But our sales, our prices were not. So it was hard, because we were wholesaling stuff in Paterson, New Jersey, which was a wholesale market. I would go there every Sunday afternoon with my dad. And my dad finally figured out that it was the speculator or middleman who made the money. My father always said, they only own a pencil and a telephone. That's all they own. And they would call you, "Do you want to sell it for $5? They'd call the other guy, "You want to buy it for $10? They'd hang up both phones. He just made $5 a box, and you made nothing.
And you can now sell it for $10.
Correct.
Without the middleman.
Correct. However, over the years, it's sometimes an educating process for the farmers themselves, for us, to realize that this isn't a wholesale market. There are the costs that we incur daily to have insurance, bags, scales, employees, fuel, all those things, rent, all those things, make us a retail farm market by default. It's just no getting around it.
Another thing that the Green Market has done is it has brought people from the farms together with city dwellers. And that has led to all sorts of interesting things.
Yes.
I understand that Mario Batali met his wife at the Green Market.
He met Susie Kahn.
Yeah.
She was selling produce?
Cheese.
Oh. And he went by to buy
Coach
some
Farms.
Cheese? Which farm?
Coach Farms.
Uh-huh.
And formerly Coach Bags, handbags.
So they met that way. I'm sure there have been other romances as well.
And just tender relationships, which weren't romances. Farmers would come in the morning, and the customers would come with soup or coffee and bring them things. And ask them about their family. And then we've had 1, 2, and 3 generations of farmers, the sons and the grandchildren working in the market. That's great.
I have my son's working now at Tucker Square, which is right by Lincoln Center, and he is 6th generation. He is I don't know if there's any 3 generation. Are there any other 3 generation farms in the system? I'm not sure, but
Kents maybe.
Not yet.
No,
they don't have a grandchild old enough yet. But it's great for my dad to see. My dad is so proud to see his grandson do this.
Now, you moved into some areas that are lower income as well, and that had to present other kinds of problems, because sometimes people rely on WIC coupons and food stamps and the like.
Right.
did you...
Well, that's an opportunity, not a problem. Mm-hmm. And that was great to have those programs for both the customers and the farmers. 175th Street is such an area in Broadway. Very successful market in a low-income area. But it had a mixed population. There was an older, elderly Jewish population still living there. There was a new Hispanic population moving in. And one of the farmers, Ashapinski, would set up with five or six workers, huge number of spaces. And they were people be lining up to get the things that he brought in from the Black Dirt area up in Goshen, New York.
I'm assuming that farmers also adjusted to the areas so that if there was a Hispanic community, they might have brought in things that they wouldn't have brought to another community.
And Hispanic workers working from the farmers who could speak the language.
Mm-hmm. The most interesting development in that, along those lines is the fact that we have new farmers who are actually from the same ethnicities that some of those customers were from. For example, there's about 12 Latino farmers now that have developed farms as a result of a special component of Green Market called the New Farmer Development Project, which encouraged them as former farmers in the sense that they were farmers prior to their immigration, to think about the opportunities here, and especially opportunities in selling at the farmers markets once they've gone into production. This has been a very exciting and rewarding development.
Because that's really also changed the way ethnic food has been made in New York, not just Hispanic food, but Chinese. Now we can get all sorts of things that are grown locally that in the past had to be imported from as far away as Asia. And I assume that's happening with Mexican foodstuffs and foods from all over the world.
But a lot of that comes right from the chefs or from the people. They want you to grow this item. And if enough people ask me, we'll grow anything.
What have you grown that you never thought you'd grow?
Vietnamese cilantro.
And is that different than other cilantro?
Oh, it's like nuclear cilantro. It's so strong, it's scary. We grow lemongrass. And, you know, it comes from Vietnam. It's native to Vietnam. But I had a friend who grew a lot of herbs, and he had Vietnam workers. And they brought him this lemongrass. I said, I'll try a couple plants. And then a couple chefs said, could you grow it? Now we grow a lot of it. And I think we're the only people in the Green Market that grow it. And we grow, you know, different berries. People ask for specific, you know, years ago we just grew raspberries and strawberries and that was it. And now we've evolved so much that, you know, a chef will call me on my blackberry to order his blackberries. Mm-hmm. And it's that far along that they can order specific little items, and we'll grow them. Just give me a month. I'll have it in the ground.
Are there certain things that just don't grow well in this climate?
Oranges.
No, but no chef is asking you to grow oranges.
No, but like, for instance, the black dirt in that Barry mentioned before.
In Goshen.
In Goshen, Pine Island, up that way. They can grow radishes, carrots, beets, any root crop better than anybody. Lettuce.
But apples.
But they can't grow apples and tomatoes.
Or corn, even.
So, you know, yeah. I'm growing tomatoes, peppers, and we grow 9 kinds of eggplant. They can't do that. So I let them have that business, and they let me have my business.
We're celebrating the 30th anniversary of the Green Market with farmer Ron Benagi and with two of the creators, Barry Benepe and Robert Lewis. This is WNYC 93.9 AM 820. We're online at WNYC.org. Initially, you had to go out and find the farmers. When did the farmers start coming to you?
They started coming to us pretty quickly, but we continued to do this kind of sitting on the back fence, sitting on the back porch. In fact, I remember Ron's dad at a Farm Bureau meeting in rural New Jersey at one of the halls that farmers attend, like the Grange Hall. And so word of mouth, though, began to spread. But again, remember, the view of New York City was really generated by the tabloids. And it still took a lot of work on the phone, in person, to convince other farmers that we had a core group of farmers who were seeing the world differently and benefiting from it.
Because in those days, if you lived 30 miles out of the city, you were convinced that the city was the scariest place in the world.
Yes,
completely.
Yes.
But I also assume that you had to change the attitudes of a lot of those farmers. Many of them probably were growing one crop because that's the way most farming was done, and they were selling to to middlemen, to wholesalers, and now suddenly they had to think about growing a lot of different things and growing them perhaps closer to organic methods and selling it themselves.
Yeah, I think my own view is that the organic component was not really important. and I've noticed that when farmers or people will call and say, oh, do you have organic? And when they come there, they don't go to the organic farmer. They go to the farmer who has the best display of food at the best price. And but they like to say, they would come to one market where we had organic apples, and that's very hard to find. And they would spend a half an hour talking to the farmer about the apples, but not buying any.
Exactly. Well, we have the other part of it. It's become such a buzzword. Organic has become such a marketing tool. You have the lady there smoking her cigarette, saying, are these organic? I say, oh, I'm sorry, was that very important to you? She goes, oh, it's so, I only eat organic. I said, really, is that organic tobacco that you're smoking? And she had no clue about, all the rest of the customers were laughing. It was like a comedy show. But she had no clue. She said, oh, so it's become a marketing tool, not a reality for some people.
But we are seeing Whole Foods, for example, a great success of Whole Foods. And I'm assuming...
But they're not organic.
Well, some of the things they sell are organic, although they're not local in many cases.
Yeah.
But I'm assuming that the success of places like Whole Foods, to some degree in New York City, is also driven by the success of the green markets. And
but Whole Foods
people have been
more,
educated to think differently about the things they buy.
Whole Foods has, I think, three floors, and only one floor is fruits and vegetables. They have it's like a big supermarket, really. And when I looked, went there when they first opened. I'm glad they're there. They attract people. But things look a little antiseptic. Piles of waxed apples. They were supposed to give origin on them, but they weren't very clear on the origin of things. And I felt it was more a newspaper portrayal than a real image. That was my feeling. It's not at all like the farmer's market.
We mentioned earlier that there was there have been some tension with the Parks Department over the years. Barry, your son Adrian is the head of the Parks Department now. I imagine he brings a very different attitude toward the green market than some of his predecessors may.
I think that's exaggerated. I think Henry Stern was, he came down to the market once and apologized because we're not a fruit and vegetable stand, because he was a Parks Commission concerned about parks. But in fact, he was very supportive of what the program was doing, as other commissioners were before him, and certainly Adrian is today. It's been great to have the Park Department support. When we first started, we didn't dream of going to a park. And our first park was in Tompkins Square when we were asked to come in by a local group who wanted to rescue the park from drug addicts. Again, the same thing as Union Square, rescue it from drug addicts. And they asked us actually to go into the park. And we're not in Union Square Park. We're out in a public place outside the park. And we said, do you want us to go into a park? And we thought that was an anathema. And the Parks Department agreed to it. They thought it helped the park as well.
Or you're often right alongside parks.
That's
like Grand Army Plaza.
Yes.
Both of you left the green market. Why?
Well, I retired. I was too old to work. I'd had enough of payrolls, that kind of stuff. And Bob left to go. He's very effective. Well, you talk about Department of Agriculture.
Well, at the time, there was a national effort to really try to expand opportunities for small farmers. And in the State Department of Agriculture was in a position to take advantage of some federal funding if it had some direction. So I basically created a job for myself at the State Agriculture Department, which I've been doing ever since, almost, 27 years, based here in the city, but working throughout the state on developing these relationships and supporting markets. We have about 340 farmers markets in the state, and there are about 30 or 40 additional farmers markets in New York City beyond the green markets that have been established by community-based organizations, for example, Far Rockaway, Coney Island, Flushing and the Bronx. So I've been working closely to continue these same ideas and build support for them, and we're finding tremendous support and growth throughout the United States in this now.
You both must be very proud of that happening, not only in New York State, but the all of the imitators all over the country.
Well, California has an extremely strong program, which they develop on their own. We did inspire some, but there are, I think, some 3,000 farmers markets around the country now.
4,000.
4,000.
Yeah, yeah, almost 4,000.
I just read it yesterday.
Yeah.
Gus Schumacher was the originator of the farmers market coupon program in Massachusetts when he was the commissioner of agriculture there. Then he subsequently joined the Department of Agriculture in Washington and really pushed the program nationally, and he's still promoting farmers markets around the country.
Haven't I read that actually there is more land is going back into farming than there was 25 years ago, reversing a trend?
Well, I can tell you that it slowed considerably. There are still developments
going people still up. Offer you a lot of money for your land?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, we can put a nice housing development
up here. Oh, it's never
here.
Ending. Yeah, because who wouldn't, everyone wants to live where I live. I mean, you can be picking tomatoes this afternoon, and you can be at a Broadway show tonight, you know, on Broadway.
So do you have a price?
I don't know how many zeros do you have. How long can you write a zero? Just keep writing, and we'll talk.
But listen, celebrity is worth something to you, right, Ronnie?
Of course.
By the way, if you would like to know about all the locations of the green markets in all five boroughs, you can find it on our show page at WNYC.org. I want to thank you all so much for coming by to celebrate the 30th birthday of the Green Market, Barry Benepe, Robert Lewis, and Farmer Ron Banagi. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Leonard.